And just not a about a person that we're interested
in. It will probably be worse than Milky Sunday, and Milky Sunday apparently did not happen. I didn't hear any follow-up on Milky Sunday.
Well, Ashton Kutcher.
Yes, this one I heard about.
Yeah, took the stand this morning in the trial of alleged serial killer Michael Gargiulo, who's accused of murdering his friend Ashley Ellerin. Gargiulo is facing two counts of murder in the deaths of two women. Kutcher was called to the stand this morning to testify about his plans to go out with Ellerin the night that she was stabbed to death in 2001. He told the court that he made plans for a date with Ellerin on February 21st, 2001. He said he last spoke to her at 8:24 p.m. that evening and called her after to let her know he was on his way home and then to a party, but she didn't answer her phone. He said he arrived at her home at 10:45 p.m. A few people in the courtroom chuckled when Kutcher said he didn't call her too much because he was trying to take her on a date and didn't want to seem overeager. The 41-year-old actor testified that when he eventually arrived at her home, he knocked on the door to no answer. When he looked through the window and tried the front door and looked through a second window, he thought it was odd that the lights were on, she wasn't there, and thought he saw red wine spilled on the carpet. The actor said he left the home thinking she wasn't there and had left because he was late. He also did not recall seeing the defendant at any parties. Prosecutors told jurors during opening statements that they believe Gargiulo attacked Ellerin from behind after she exited the shower that night. And Deputy District Attorney Daniel Ekman says he believes the spilled wine Kutcher saw was actually blood.
Now, how was he never investigated for this killing?
That's the reason that I included the story, to be frank, is that it's like, okay, so he was the last person that was in contact with her.
You were at the house. You saw the blood on the floor. You thought it was wine, but I mean, like, I'm surprised this didn't turn into a whole OJ thing where it's like, Ashton Kutcher, did he murder this actress? And it's like, no, somehow the guy like skates on the whole thing.
Yeah. And it's and not only just skates on it, but is like a witness, you know, against whoever it ended up being.
Yeah, because this guy is like a legit serial killer who has apparently broken women's houses and then stabbed them to death. Charming gentleman.
My God, I love looking at the pictures of them. It's so 2001.
Yeah.
She's got a tongue ring.
But did 2001 really look that much different from today?
I mean, 2001 was like today spiked with the 90s. That's the way I always think of it.
Yeah.
Like that's like, I mean, I graduated from high school in 2004 and there was definitely still some lingering 90s-ness. Like in high school, I definitely had adult jellies and like, I wore the way I wore my hair. Like, my friends still crimped their hair sometimes.
Yeah, Britney Spears was 99, wasn't she?
Yeah, like, Britney Spears was when I was in middle school.
Yeah.
So, yeah, she was around 99. So, you think there was still a lot of, I owned pleather pants in high school. Let's put it that way.
And it was like the weird...
I don't know anyone that owns pleather pants now.
The weird thing about the 90s is it was all this sort of, like, bizarre perversion of things that were actually good in the 1980s. Mm-hmm. It's like they took them and they made them worse and they became more popular. It's like, how did you do that? How did you achieve that? But, yeah, I read this today and I'm like, wait, Ashton Kutcher is a murder witness? And he wasn't ever accused or charged? Or because Ashton Kutcher, like back at that point in time, was kind of a loose dude.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was like when, I mean, I'm trying to think of when that 70s show came out, but it was definitely, that was like the early days of that 70s show. And it's weird to think, at that point, he wasn't like serious actor Ashton Kutcher.
But
he's still not serious actor Ashton Kutcher, but way more.
He's done some stuff.
I was going to say way more now, like to the point where you're like, okay, like we can, it's like, he's, what's happened to him is like what happened to Matthew McConaughey, where it was like, I don't even remember which project it was, but it was like he did one thing that we were like, okay, you're not just like the goof.
Yeah.
Maybe it was marrying Demi Moore, I'm not sure. But Yeah, it is. But like those days, I mean, if you think about it, he's 41 now. So that means in 2001, he was in his mid-20s.
Yeah, he was 23.
Yeah.
And it's sort of, usually if there's a 23-year-old dude at a murder scene, cops are coming at you hard. Whether you're the murderer or not, the cops are coming at you hard because they don't know. And you don't have a lifetime of proving, hey, wait, I don't murder people. So I'm shocked that this is the first I've ever heard of his involvement in this.
That's the main reason that I wanted to bring up this story, was for that exact reason that, like, I mean, you and I read various news sources more than the average person,
yeah,
just for research for this show. And I was completely shocked that I had literally never heard any, and I've been reading, as I'm sure you have, I've been reading the news almost every day, unless, you know, I'm tired and just want to binge watch Netflix. But I've been reading the news almost every day since I was like maybe 18, which would mean it since 2004. And obviously, I mean, this happened 18 years ago. There's been more talk about this since 2001.
Yeah.
And somehow Ashton Kutcher just kind of fell under the radar of this. That's why I looked and I was like, Ashton Kutcher, as a witness in a murder, what?
Because let me tell you what happens. All right, a crime is committed. Okay, and I love cops. All right, I have to preface this by saying I love police officers. But a crime is committed, and the first thing police do is they're like, "Is there a black person around?" And if there isn't a black person around, the next question is there a white male in his 20s around? Those are your two like initial suspect groups, because the white men in their 20s are the ones that cause most of the problems. And the black people get blamed for it.
Ay, ay, ay. Well, it's very strange to like look at pictures of her and stuff. She was 22.
Yeah.
Like she was young.
Well, so was he. I mean, it's not.
It's true.
This is like Moby and Natalie Portman.
God, that story is so funny.
That's just creepy. But yeah. Then again, so is Moby.
Well, they've been going, you know, that speaking of Moby and Natalie Portman, you know that like she came out and was like, he's fabricating all of this.
Yeah.
And usually the response is just like, I'm going to stop talking about it.
Yeah.
But Moby's response was basically like, I can't believe she's pretending this never happened. It's like, why are you talking about dating an 18-year-old girl when you were like in your mid-30s?
Yeah, no, he's since come out and officially apologized for that.
Oh, so. Okay, I didn't see that update.
But yeah, interesting. How did he not at least get accused of this? Why wasn't this in all the papers?
That's what shocks me is even though he wasn't like as big a star as he is now then, he was still on a major network television show.
He must have had a rock solid alibi for wherever he was, because he was going to a Grammy
like,
party
with the
that
time
night.
Of death. Yeah.
Yeah, but he must have had a rock solid alibi for where he was every minute that night for the cops not to be all over him. I mean, that's just the way it goes. Wait, you were dating her? She's dead. You were at her house earlier. We have your fingerprints on her doorbell. She's dead. Like, why are you not being investigated? That's unusual.
Well, they do say that...
It is also, by the way, Los Angeles in the early 2000s, when we should point out that Michael Jackson was going on.
Yeah.
And OJ was going on. And who was it? Peter Falk, didn't he murder his wife?
Yeah, that was around that time, too.
And allegedly murdered his wife, and the night of had to go back into the restaurant because he'd left his gun in the booth.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Well, the thing is, the main thing that I think pointed them away from Ashton Kutcher having any culpability in this is that I guess once her roommate is the one that found her, and then once they just started questioning all of her friends, and every single one of them named this guy that lived in her neighborhood and was like, he met her a couple months, like she met him a couple months before, and he was like fixated on
yeah.
her.
Yeah, we think it's creepy, dude. Are you sure it's not Ashton? No, we think it's creepy, dude.
No, we think it's
dude.
Creepy, dude. Yeah. And it's, well, and then the other girl that he killed in 2005, or I'm sorry, allegedly, because the trial's not over, but that he allegedly killed in 2005, lived in the exact same neighborhood, and like his apartment was like steps away from hers. So it's so like the And it and the, you know, whenever the natures of the killings are the same, they're like, okay, this stands to reason. Like, it's just like with the BTK killer, it's like, oh, if they were bound, tortured, and killed, it's probably one of his victims.
Yeah.
But it is, I know, it is like a little, seems a little coincidental that Ashton Kutcher happened to be...
Yeah, just weird they didn't get charged. By the way, that's why you don't rent on Cielo Drive, kids. Don't do it. From the New York Post, and only for the sake of brevity, because there are longer versions of the story, but this is the one that that gets to the point quickest and has the most relevant quotes. So, you know, I'm not endorsing the New York Post in their politics, but... The New York Post...
Let's make this very clear.
The New York Post makes radio-friendly content. Let me put it that way. You know, they write things to the right length.
Yeah, they write things succinctly.
They do actually have journalists who work over there, which is nice. Men are afraid to mentor women after Me Too, and it hurts us all. Study.
Oh, my goodness.
This came from a study, which is what that means at the end. Kid exposes himself to taunt female soccer referee. I will have to read that later. Men are scared of women now. Leanin.org. Oh, here we go. Leanin.org and SurveyMonkey's new Mentor Her poll reveals Friday. This was a week ago, Friday, by the way, not this, like 2 weeks ago, this coming Friday. Reveals Friday that 60% of male managers report feeling too nervous about being accused of harassment to interact with women in common workplace activities such as mentoring, socializing, and one-on-one meetings. That's a 32% spike from 2018. 32% in a year, with an additional 36% of men saying they now actively avoid women in junior level positions, effectively chopping down their shot at climbing the corporate ladder.
Aye.
Quote, the vast majority of managers and senior leaders are men, end quote, says Sheryl Sandberg, absentee mother, Facebook COO, and founder of LeanIn.org in a statement. Quote, if they are reluctant even to meet one-on-one with women, there is no way women can get an equal shot at proving themselves, end quote. I call her an absentee mother because Facebook is run by a 12-year-old and an absentee mother. That would be Mark Zuckerberg and Sheryl Sandberg.
Respectively.
Yes. Widening the gender gap is actually an abuse of power, she says. Quote, we're in a bad place. No one's ever gotten promoted without a one-on-one meeting. That's nonsense. I feel confident in saying that.
Yeah, that's
well, you can feel confident in saying that all you want, Sheryl Sandberg. That's not the way the world works. Sandberg tells CBS This Morning host Gail King. Senior men right now are 9 times more hesitant to travel with a woman and 6 times more likely to hesitate to have a work dinner. Gee, I wonder why that is, Sheryl Sandberg. Could that be because men aren't stupid? Could that be because men aren't stupid? Could that be because even the appearance of anything is enough to blow up your career right now? Just the appearance, just the whisper. Let alone you find yourself in a situation with somebody who is willing to play that card to get ahead, whether something happens or not. If you are traveling alone with a female coworker, you're asking for it. You're asking to have your life ruined. If you are going out to dinner with a female coworker one-on-one, you are asking to have your life ruined. If you are staying late at the office with a female coworker, you are asking to have your life ruined. Those are the new rules of Me Too that have been embraced by women.
But that's, I mean... That's the reason that, as I've spoken about on the show before, as much as I, of all people, given the various professional roles I've taken over the years, have experienced my share of sexual harassment. But rather than not from you, you do it jokingly,
right.
but it's some serious actual sexual harassment, and. I've always approached it from a standpoint of just serve it right back to them. Just proverbially kicked them in the place that hurts. Not literally, obviously, but that's always been my issue with the Me Too movement, is as much as, obviously, as someone who has been both sexually harassed and sexually assaulted, I'm very sensitive to the struggle of women that entails. But at the same time, this is exactly why it can be negative, because it's almost like some of the women involved in this movement are saying, like, I can't take care of myself. I can't defend myself. It's like, don't say I can't be alone with a man. Instead, take a self-defense class in case when you're alone with a man, you need to do something.
Well, one of the great criticisms of Me Too that I think is an accurate criticism of Me Too is that it is that the movement infantilizes women.
Exactly. It makes us seem like these weak little flowers.
Yeah, there are these helpless things being preyed upon by men.
I can beat the crap out of most men.
Yeah. Me included.
Like, check this out.
Yeah.
I just slapped my bicep, by the way.
Shay would be more than a match for me, so...
And that's the thing, is that that's exactly right, and exactly my point, is that as much as, yes, it's good to speak out against men treating us improperly, the way that it has been gone about is actually kind of setting the concept of feminism back. It's making it, like you said, it's making it seem like we're weak and like we can't handle it. And like, not that you should have to handle being raped or being sexually assaulted or even being sexually harassed or spoken to improperly, but it's a matter of how you handle it.
If we're talking about guys like Harvey Weinstein, okay, no problem. I have no problem whatsoever. Take that guy down. Not an issue.
Yeah, screw him straight in the ear.
If we're talking about a guy like Pixar co-founder, what's his name, got thrown out of Pixar, tried to go work somewhere else, got thrown out of there. His name should be at the tip of my tongue, and it is at the tip of my tongue.
Ed Catmull?
No.
The other one?
Oh, God, what the heck?
Alvy Ray Smith?
No.
Jim Morris? Pete Doctor?
Pete Doctor. Was it Pete? John Lasseter.
I'm just reading through, like, founder, key people.
I don't know what to make of the John Lasseter situation. Apparently, he hugged people a lot. Apparently, he would put his hand on women's legs during meetings, not necessarily in a sexual way, though some of them claim that it was. There are other people who work there who are like, what? No.
He's just like a really touchy-feely guy.
He's a touchy guy. All right. And he's also...
It's like being a close talker.
He's also one of the top creative minds in Hollywood. Well, he's out of work now because a bunch of women said, nope, we're uncomfortable with him. He has to go.
Yeah, and Pixar co-founder to leave Disney after quote-unquote missteps.
Takes time off, goes through all the sensitivity training, apologizes, all the rest of this, gets a job at another studio, gets driven out of there because, oh my God, we can't work here because that horrible sexual harasser man is here now.
Well, and that's what I'm saying, is that it's also made it become like everyone's trigger finger is very quick. Yeah. Whereas, like, I mean, for example, like, okay, anytime I see Lenny Clark, he gives me a big hug. It's just Lenny giving me a hug.
Yeah.
It's not, I know for a fact that he's not trying to hit on me. I know for a fact that he is not trying to grope me. I know that it's just a man that I've worked with several times giving me a hug, and that's it. But there are so many women who don't react to it that way, because now it's like every single little thing is, oh, he's harassing me, or, oh, this is inappropriate. It's like, that's the thing. It's like, that's what I was saying when I got into, after the Louis C.K. thing happened, when I got into a discussion, I happened to be at Nick's Comedy Stop, like the night that story broke, with four other comics, all male. And we were talking about it. And I said, well, honestly, the hardest thing for me is that I like just being treated like I'm anyone else. Because that's the other thing. Lenny hugs everybody.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, male, female, doesn't matter. I was like, I miss being treated just like anybody else. And not being approached very walking on eggshells-y and always having it be like about that and always having everyone just like be careful about that. And I forget who it was, but somebody said to me, well, so do you experience being treated differently because of this? I said, I am right now.
Yeah.
The fact that we're talking about this and you're asking me essentially if I'm okay, I am right now. I like it better when you give me guff and I give it right back to you and then it's over. Like, it really is. I mean, it's as much as, obviously, like you said, like the Harvey Weinstein thing, like the thing that Louis C.K. pulled, all of that, obviously incredibly inappropriate, but...
Well, you know how I feel about Louis C.K. I put Louis C.K. in a different category because Louis C.K. didn't just grab women. Louis C.K. asked.
That's true.
And we can talk about power imbalance and we can talk
and
about...
And he admitted all of that, yeah, too. He was like, I just abused my power.
You can talk about power imbalance. You can talk about creepiness. You can talk about all of those things. Louis C.K. had been doing that
for years, his
entire life.
Yeah.
Before he was famous, he did that. Okay, when he was just a struggling stand-up comic, he did that. And there were women that were more than happy to just sit there and, you know, Louis's going to...
Let him do his thing.
I got to watch Louis masturbate. Hooray. My life is complete. I don't think Louis understood, as his star rose and as his power rose...
That
the nature of the ask changed. Because most people... I'm not going to say everybody, but I'm going to say most people... as they move from one stage to another in their lives, are not necessarily conscious of how their power grows, particularly...
Or if even how their behavior is going to be interpreted.
When you deal with entertainers who are, by and large, the most insecure people in the world, they don't sit there and say, oh, I have all the power, I have a great life, everything's going my way.
Yeah, that's what every comedian...
That's what producers do. Producers prey on those people. And that's how the Hollywood relationship works.
I was going to say, every famous comedian that I've ever met, when I've been like, oh, I'm such a big fan, or something like that, which I try not to say stuff like that because it seems naive and silly.
Yeah.
But when I say like, oh, I love your stuff, it's like, oh, all my stuff is garbage. Like, that's usually the response. It's just like, oh, I'm terrible. And it's like, you have... multiple HBO specials. How can you say you're terrible? But I guess even if I get to that point, I'd probably feel the same way. Just like, no, I'm awful. Well, that's like,
I'll tell
when
you,
when Doug Stanhope came by Nick's, I offered to him, I was like, do you want, I had like, we were already well into the show, so there wasn't really time for him to do set. Plus he was at the Wilbur. So like, I knew they'd get mad if people were paying $20 to see him at Nick's. And then he did the Wilbur the next night. But I said, I'm really sorry that I didn't offer you a set. I just figured, you know, with you at the Wilbur. He goes, I don't know, it's fine. I hate doing comedy anyways. I'm terrible at it. I was like, all right. But
I'll tell you one guy who's got a good level of self-confidence in entertainment, and as if the roles that he takes weren't evidence enough of this, is Willem Dafoe.
Oh, yeah,
because
definitely.
When I met him, he was standing outside a show in New York talking to a friend, and I walked over and I said, I'm sorry to bother you. I'm a huge fan of your work. And he looked at me and he smiled and he shook my hand and he said, that doesn't bother me at all. And I was like, well, you know, and it was just like, great, awesome guy.
Willem Dafoe is pretty cool.
Women, back to the New York Post, and especially women of color, because that has to be in the story.
Which color?
All right.
I'm kidding.
Now I have to send you out for training. Now I have to send you out for training.
I'm kidding.
And this is true, by the way.
I don't like that phrase.
I know. I don't mean to dismiss this point, but the fact that it's in here as an aside lets you know that someone is pushing a very particular narrative with this story.
That's what I'm saying. I mean no disrespect to women of color. I just, the phrase women of color just bothers me.
Women, and especially women of color, don't get the same amount of mentoring as men, which means we're not getting an equal seat at the table, Sandberg says. It's not enough to not harass us. You need to not ignore us either. The study reports that the fear factor grew in concurrence with the rise of the massive Me Too social media movement founded by activist Tarana Burke and fueled by a torrent of models and actresses accusing Harvey Weinstein and Bill Cosby of sexual harassment and assault. Let's not use them as examples because those are actual monsters. In the last 3 years, scores of women and some high-profile men, such as actors Terry Crews and Anthony Rapp, came forward to voice their experiences with harassment by people in positions of power. Again, Kevin Spacey, monster, let's not use him as an example. Now Sandberg says it's time for men to step up and redefine what it means to be a good guy at work before it costs us all a whole lot of cold hard cash. Quote, there's not a company in the world that can afford to leave talent on the sidelines because it's female. But that's what will keep happening unless all of us, especially men, commit to doing better. Okay. I agree with Sheryl Sandberg on that last point. Okay. What I don't agree with is this idea that men ought to be subjecting themselves to risk for the sake of mentoring some employee.
That's what I'm saying, is that it's a disservice to women in general that's exactly what I mean. It's like I shouldn't have to. It reminds me of, okay, so when I first started doing comedy, my uncle was at some sort of event and met Steve Sweeney. And so he said, he's like, you know, my niece just started doing comedy. I'd love if you could give me your information and just tell, you know, talk to her about it. And so I ended up meeting up with him for coffee. It was entirely innocent. Yeah. Nothing ever happened. Like, literally, we just talked about comedy. He gave me a Mickey Spillane book because I'm distantly related to him.
Nice.
Within 2 months, it was all over Boston Comedy that I was sleeping with Steve Sweeney.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just because people knew that we had hung out once.
Yeah.
In like I said, in a very innocent, very non-sexual, romantic way.
The optics are all it takes.
Yeah, that's the thing, is, and it's all, as like you said, it's all, if I can't even, let me think of like a random, if Ted Pettengill had hung out with Steve Sweeney all day,
nobody'd say a word.
And it doesn't matter that, like, it's like, that's the thing, is it doesn't matter even if I had slept with him, which I mean I definitely didn't. But either way, it's still going to come off that way.
Yeah, that's
the problem. And it's a disservice to me because I am just as good a comedian as most of the men I know in the industry, but I can't hang out with an older, more experienced comic who's a man without it looking like something else.
Here's some reality that is clearly lost on Sheryl Sandberg, who, by the way, I have no idea whatsoever how Sheryl Sandberg got or kept any of her jobs. Because I have yet to see anything approaching basic competence as an executive coming from her. I think she's been in the right place at the right time and she's gotten lucky or what have you. But in the midst of all of these Facebook crises that are going on, Sheryl is nowhere to be found. Neither is Mark Zuckerberg, for that matter, but he's a 12-year-old, and I expect that. You know, when you're 12 years old and the window gets broken in the neighbor's house, you run and hide and hope nobody saw you. Sheryl Sandberg is the mom of that kid that just won't answer the phone when you know their kid is the one that broke the window. Absentee mother and the 12-year-old running Facebook. The men who run companies, the men who are C-suite level, the men who are executives, and the women, by the way, I don't mean to make this exclusively about men. The people who run companies, the people who are executive level, are there for one very good reason. They have a particular ability to assess, understand, and conquer risk. That's how you get there. You get there by being able to see opportunity. You get there by being able to see trends. You get there by being able to understand the risk that is in front of you and to mitigate it or to dodge it or to simply ignore it because you know the government isn't going to do anything and can just drop your bikes on every street corner, whatever it is. The people who are in those positions understand risk, and they approach every situation in terms of risk analysis. So for men, if they're approaching every situation in terms of risk analysis and they see all this Me Too stuff going on,
then they're not going to want to take the risk.
And innocent men are getting taken down, which has happened.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about this since Me Too broke, where we've had women saying, I don't care if they're guilty or not. Let's hang them all. If innocent men get harmed by this, who cares? If innocent men get harmed by this, too bad. Guess who reads that? Guess who understands that? The men who run corporations. The men in leadership positions. Because their job, their life, is to know and understand risk. And they see that and they say, no way in hell. No way in hell am I going to be alone with a woman. Not going to happen. No closed door meetings, no dinners, no business travel, none of it. Can't take that risk. Because it's a risk that you cannot control, and it's a battle that you cannot win. Once a woman says, he touched me, it's over.
Oh yeah, that's done.
Everything that you've spent, whether you're guilty or not, everything that you've spent your entire life building, your entire career, gone.
Mm-hmm.
Overnight. Done. And it's not like you're going to go somewhere else. Look at what happened to John Lasseter.
And it's
all the women will scream and cry and threaten to quit. You're done.
Well, and it's become, too, just... like I said, it's become that everything can be considered that. Not everything, but I mean things that were once innocent and not innocent because times hadn't changed yet and whatever, but things that are like when you put your hand on my shoulder when you're trying to get past me when we go to tavern after the show, I don't feel like you're sexually harassing me. You're just walking past me and I'm your friend and we've worked together for years and that's it. If you squeezed my boob while you did it, yeah, maybe I'd have a problem with that.
When do I ever touch you at tavern?
I don't know.
In a non-sexual manner.
Shut up. But that's my point is that, I mean, a life can be ruined for something as simple as touching somebody on the shoulder.
Yeah.
And that's, and a lot of it is just the precedent that's been set of, okay, now anytime a man does anything slightly untoward, which, like I said, I mean, it's not like guys should be, it's not like it's the 50s and guys should be pinching their secretaries' butts. But at the same time, there is something to be said for, like, a platonic pat on the back. Like, that's not
all the
harassment.
All the progressives ran around making fun of Mike Pence a couple years ago when he said, I am never alone with a woman who is not my wife. But you know who listened to Mike Pence? Everybody. Man who is in a leadership position in this country. It is basic survival at this point. Yeah. That's all it is for us.
Wait, Derek, and you're alone with a woman right now.
And yes, but I'm not really.
Yeah, I was going to say there are people listening to us and there's somebody like right through that window.
There's people listening to us and there's a studio full of people next door. So it's not, you know.
Hey guys.
I, by the way, for the most part...
Look at Joel.
Yeah, see, there's Joel. Yeah, Joel's keeping an eye on this whole thing. By the way, I work with a lot of young women. I have no problem mentoring the young women that I work with. I have no problem being alone with them, closed-door meetings, anything like that. But only if I know them well.
Yeah.
That risk assessment goes through my head. I am not going to put myself into a situation where somebody could turn around and say, this thing happened.
Yeah.
Because you're done at that point. It's over. It's over. And I have worked too hard to get where I am to put myself in that position. If I know you, if I trust you, if we have a working relationship, that's fine. So I think this fear that's being talked about is a little bit exaggerated, but at the same time, it is very, very real.
Mm.
And the way that men behave in the workplace, here's the reality. We don't, the men who have everything to lose don't want young women around them. They just don't want them around.
Mm.
There is too much risk there. And until the online outrage mobs stop, and until the we're going to fire you if somebody so much as breathes a word that something inappropriate happens stops, that's the way it's going to be. And it may be that an entire generation of women will not get the opportunity to advance in business because of this situation that you created.
That's the thing. Talk about shooting yourself in the foot. It's
sad.
It's a disservice.
It's sad. And it's not, I don't feel good about that. But Sheryl Sandberg is right that men hold the levers of power in this country. And if we're in a position where men are only comfortable dealing with men and not with women, guess who's going to advance?
Men.
That's just the way it's going to go. Unless we can come to some sort of an agreement.
I was going to say, it's like we have to have some sort of come to Jesus meeting of the minds.
But even then, there's always going to be some level of crazy out there that'll make false accusations.
Mm-hmm. And that ultimately is the problem. Is the problem is not the women who have made very accurate and warranted accusations from a place of sound mind. The problem is the women who have watched that happen and use it to take liberty to make maybe not false but exaggerated accusations and taken upon themselves to do that, even if it's not necessarily valid.
And by the way, the very men who are retreating from women in the workplace are the ones that wouldn't harass women in the first place.
I was going to say, the ones that would never lay a finger on them.
They're the ones who were always respectful and always cautious and always careful, and now they're like, I can't even be careful anymore. It's not enough to be careful. I have to remove myself entirely from this situation.
Come on, ladies. You're screwing things up for us.
Yeah. And it's here's the thing. I love working with young people. I love
You're like 50 years older than me.
Thank you. I love being able to teach employees and share what I know with them.
That's part of what life is all about, is imparting wisdom and
help them build their
careers. Yeah, like molding people for the future. I mean, I before I met you, I didn't know anything about radio, and I'd always wanted to do it. And now I'm like halfway decent at it.
Quarter way.
Shut up.
Is that a thing? Quarter way?
I mean, I guess. Maybe. I mean, here's the length of my laptop. That would be a quarter way.
All right. Let me be fair. Third way.
Third way. Okay.
Third way decent.
I'll take that. That is fair. I don't know if you heard about what's going on in Oklahoma right now.
I'm going to guess it has something to do with either all the abortion clinics are gone or the abortions have been banned.
Nothing to do with abortion, actually.
All the illegal immigrants have been dropped
off there.
Nothing
to do with illegal immigrants either. You coming up short?
Robert Mueller is retiring there after the Russia investigation.
Nope. Oklahoma Attorney General Mike Hunter came out swinging at Johnson & Johnson in the nation's first opioid crisis trial involving a pharmaceutical company. Hunter opened the state's case against consumer products giant Johnson & Johnson and several of their subsidiaries. Why can't I speak right now? By saying the powerful painkillers have led to the, quote, worst man-made public health crisis, end quote, in U.S. history. The state alleges the drug makers extensively marketed highly addictive opioids for years in a way that overstated their effectiveness and underplayed the risk of addiction. The state's attorney general told a judge yesterday that corporate greed is responsible for an opioid crisis that has cost Oklahoma thousands of lives and will take billions of dollars to repair. This was yesterday at the start of, as I said, the nation's first trial against the companies accused of fueling the problem.
Probably,
and this is all according to Fox Kansas City.
Probably. Well, we had a trial here in Massachusetts going against one of the pharmaceutical companies over their marketing. But the one in Oregon is different because they're going after Johnson & Johnson.
Oklahoma.
Where the wind blows swiftly down the lane. they're accusing of Johnson & Johnson of deliberately manufacturing a sari with the fringe on top. And
nice reference.
Johnson & Johnson's response to this has been like, well, we don't have any control over it once it leaves the plant. I mean, we didn't tell people to become drug addicts. We just made the drugs.
I was going to say, that's literally Johnson & Johnson's defense is
pretty weak.
Oh, well, yeah, like their defense is, well, it does cause pain to stop, though.
We didn't know it was addictive.
But I mean, there are plenty of effective pain medications that are not crazy addictive. Yeah. Like, I mean, just on Memorial Day, Sean and I were walking on Wollaston Beach, and he was kind of giving me guff, like making fun of, you know, that Quincy's kind of trashy and like how Wollaston Beach isn't the nicest beach. And I was like, oh, shut up. And as I'm like kind of scoffing at him, we walked by a heroin needle.
Yeah.
And I was like, maybe let's put our shoes back on and go back on the boardwalk.
Yeah, I was going to say, were you pulling heroin needles out of your foot at that point in time?
But it used to be they only showed up on Revere Beach. But that's the thing, is that as I've spoken about on the show before, I always say that going to college kind of saved my life, because I left Quincy and 3 months later I got back and all of my friends were doing OxyContin.
Yeah.
And then I came back, I went back to college and I came back again 3 months later and all of my friends were doing heroin because OxyContin got too expensive and heroin's pretty much the same thing.
Yeah.
And that's not, I mean, I'm not saying that like Johnson & Johnson was necessarily purposely pushing this knowing it was addictive, but there should have been, I mean, there's something to be said for quality control and for, I mean, it's almost like when you want to build something and you do an environmental impact study, because I mean, like I said, there are plenty of, even like something like Percocet or Vicodin is not as addictive as OxyContin. I've known so many people who have died, so many people, whether it's from overdosing or from killing themselves because they can't stop taking this drug.
But here's the problem. Oklahoma is going to lose this case. This is my prediction.
I know. Oh, I know they are.
Oklahoma is going to lose this case.
That's the sad part.
The reason they are suing.
Well, it's not the only sad part, but it's.
The reason they're suing Johnson & Johnson is because Johnson & Johnson has billions of dollars. And the state of Oklahoma, like the other states in the United States of America, has run up a massive bill trying to deal with the opioid epidemic.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So they're going after the most deep-pocketed company they can find. The problem is, Johnson & Johnson's defense is actually 100% legitimate. All they're doing is manufacturing a product that does a certain thing. The FDA has said, you can make this because it provides pain relief to people suffering from severe injuries. Used as directed,
those are the key words that are going to be the reason they don't lose.
It's not safe. And the case that Oklahoma is trying to make and will fail to make is that, used as directed, opioids are still addictive, and we never should have had them in the first place. You can't really win. Maybe you can get a jury to get you a settlement on that, but the appeals court is going to throw it out. And they're going to say, look, this isn't a defective product.
Yeah.
This isn't a product that was marketed in a misleading way. Okay? We gave you fire.
Yeah, like it's not like it's over the counter or anything.
We gave you fire and we said this is dangerous, but you can heat your house with it, and you took it and you threw it around the woods and burned the woods down. That's not our fault. We didn't tell you to throw the fire in the woods. In fact, we told you not to, but you did it anyway.
You do realize what this sounds like though, right? Philip Morris.
Philip Morris was a different thing because they knew. They had research that they had been sitting on, that not only that nicotine was addictive, but that nicotine caused cancer.
But, well, the thing, that's, I guess, and I agree with you, Oklahoma's not going to win.
I mean,
Johnson & Johnson's going to win this case.
Are we going to sue the fentanyl people for making fentanyl that kills people when they take too much fentanyl? Fentanyl has a very specific use. You're not supposed to even have it.
But theoretically, like you said, the use as directed is like their biggest ace in the hole in terms of having this case thrown out. But the difference being, which you also addressed, is that, like, I've known people who've gotten in car accidents and been prescribed OxyContin and get addicted to it, taking it is exactly as directed.
Sure.
And the thing, like you said, so Philip Morris was sitting on this research that cigarettes were bad for you and that they didn't release it. Johnson & Johnson should have had that same research for these drugs. They should have before, because they know how powerful it is, obviously, because excuse me, because it's only prescribed in extreme situations. Like, I mean, I tore my quadricep up the middle and I got prescribed Tylenol with codeine.
Let me ask you a question. Did anyone before the advent of Vicodin and Percocet and all the rest of this stuff, did anyone not understand that opium was addictive? Did anyone not notice what happened to China?
But see, the
in the late 1800s and the early 1900s, before the Gang of Four came along and executed all the opioid addicts.
But the difference with that is, you hear opium or you hear heroin, and you think, okay, addictive, harmful drug. You go to the doctor, get a prescription, go to the pharmacy, have something with a label that a licensed pharmacist gives to you. It doesn't create the same picture in your brain, especially because the word opioid or opiate or anything like that is not actually in the name.
But see, that's the responsibility of the doctor, not the manufacturer. They knew what they were making. The FDA knew what they were approving when they approved it. And really,
stupid FDA.
I think Oklahoma is suing the FDA.
But the FCC, though. I love you guys.
But the problem is, if you sue the FDA doesn't have any money. They're the government.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's like suing yourself if it's the state versus the FDA.
You're not getting billions from us. We don't have billions in our budget. We got like 10 guys over here. Go away.
Well, I think if you look at the witness list for this case, the prosecution's witness list, this is what really bothers me about the story, is that a large number of them are the parents of kids who have died, or kids who, you know, are in rehab, or kids who are in jail, and I think that that's perhaps the most tragic, other than obviously the deaths and the addiction and all that, but one of the most tragic things about the opioid crisis is that these parents are just grasping at straws to find someone to be held responsible.
But this is how you get this case by a state jury, is to say, look at all these lives have been ruined, and here's the parade of lives destroyed.
Yeah.
And there's going to be emotional testimony coming out of the emotional testimony, and it's going to break your heart. At the end of the day, this is a product liability case.
Yeah.
The product is not defective.
Yeah, the product does exactly what it's supposed to do.
The product does exactly what it's supposed to do. And is addiction a side effect of the product? Yes, but that was extremely well known when the product was approved by the FDA.
And to be fair, I didn't even think about this until you just said that. But to be fair, anytime you get anything from the pharmacist, they give you a whole list of possible side effects.
Yeah.
And I imagine I've never gotten OxyContin from the pharmacist before, because like I said, I've never been injured badly enough. And I think I was offered it when I tore my quad, but I was just like, I have an addictive personality. I'm good with that. Yeah. Just give me something. Give me diet that.
I was offered it when I got my wisdom tooth taken out, and I told him I didn't want it.
Yeah, like that's the thing, is I was like, I don't want that ever going into my body. What's happened to a lot of friends that I've had.
They gave me the script anyway, and I never filled it.
I
never filled it. I sent my wife to fill the prescriptions, and I said,
fill that one.
Go get the 400 milligram Tylenol. Do not fill the OC. I don't want it.
But the thing of it is just, you know, like I said, it must say on the pharmacist notes that it has a high rate of addiction.
Yeah.
There's no way, the FDA would not allow. And I think you're right. That's how Johnson & Johnson is going to win this case, is just that even if they are making this incredibly addictive, harmful substance, they're doing it by the letter.
Yeah.
They haven't broken any laws in doing so.
Were those pills misrepresented? Were they defective in any possible way? No, they weren't.
Exactly.
So
they're doing just what they're supposed to do.
And it's like I say, they may get that state verdict, but that's going to get thrown out as soon as you hit a federal appeals court. 855-915-9636. It is The Big Picture. I'm Derek Gary. She's Shea Spillane. We're gone at 9 o'clock, and On the Town with Mikey D is here with everything you need to know about the Boston music scene. When we come back, our favorite things from the past week and the strangest things from the past week. But before we get to that, these kids are back out on tour. So go get some tickets if they're coming to a place near you.
Because if you use drugs, you better leave it alone. Drugs are contagious. They're killers. Every drug is a killer. Stay away from drugs. Drugs will take your life away. And if you want to live, stay away from drugs. Because they are super bad, super bad, super bad, super bad, super bad.
If you're a single man under the age of 35, you'd probably like to know what the ladies are looking for on an online dating site. A guy who had a few drinks and later got pulled over for buzz driving. See, that could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. And doesn't a guy who's back living with his parents but calls them my roommates just scream, Mr. Right?
Buzzed, busted, and broke. Because buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Everything is awesome. Everything is cool when you're part of a team. Everything is awesome when we live in our dream.
WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. We're wrapping things up here at The Big Picture. But before we go, we want to tell you what's hot, which is the coolest thing from the past or coming week. For me, I cannot go, but I highly encourage other people to. Tomorrow is Mural Masters in Cambridge. Four local artists, backed by corporate sponsors, will team up with a group of creative teenagers from the community for a mural-making competition judged by community members and a voting panel. While the artists and their team members get to work on their public art display, attendees will get to enjoy live music and an atmosphere of competitive creative fun. And proceeds, all the proceeds from the competition benefit the Community Arts Center Youth Programming, which fosters kids' creativity, encourages personal development, and promotes racial and social justice along the way. I know a lot of people who grew up going to the community center in Cambridge and the Community Arts Center in Cambridge, and it's such an excellent influence on the community. It's $50 admission, which I know is a bit steep, but it's going to an amazing cause. You can get your tickets at communityartcenter.org/mural-masters.
I am really tempted. I wish if I'd been thinking about it, I would have busted out Frank Sinatra's It's the Most Wonderful Time of the Year for this. because indeed it is. The month of June, as always.
You're going to say something nerdy, aren't you?
It is Crab Fest at Turner's Seafood. And you know what that means?
Oh, something delicious. Never mind.
30 days of King Crab.
Yes, get it.
Plus, there'll be other kinds of crab, but 30 days of King Crab, the best seafood on the planet. If you disagree with me, we're going to have words. That's all I'm going to say.
You've had Maine lobster, yeah, right?
Have you had King Crab?
Yes, I have had. I mean, King Crab's pretty dope.
Maine lobster is chicken compared to King Crab's duck, all right? It's flavorless Maine lobster. You have the King Crab.
King Crab is
like,
a very like distinct, robust
seafood
piece of
flavor.
Shellfish.
Where have you been all my life? And if you've only ever had like imitation crab meat or the crab meat they've got at the lunch counter in the crab
meat
salad,
you're gonna need to try this.
No. You need to spend the money and get yourself some delicious steamed King Crab with Old Bay butter and a side of corn and some mashed potatoes.
And they had, I love. The first time I had King Crab was in Arkansas, and there's a picture of me just holding the crab leg. Like, it looks like a monster claw coming across my face.
Yep.
But, I mean, they're like a foot long.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
That's what you're going to get. You order it up, you're going to get some legs on a plate. June 1st is when it starts. 30
Where
days.
Is this?
Turner's Seafood. That is in Melrose. That is in Salem. That is at turnersseafood.com. Turnersseafood.com. If you haven't been to Turner's, you should know by now I'm a huge fan of the place, but if you haven't been, go. And if you like crab, they've usually got Maryland soft shell, and they just fry the whole thing and throw it on a sandwich and give it to you.
Oh, heck yeah.
Which a lot of people, I'm not a big fan of the soft shell.
I prefer king crab if I'm going to have crab.
Yeah, I don't like eating the shell. It just seems wrong to me. Okay, growing up around lobster, I'm like, you don't eat the shell, do you? But they've had Dungeness in the past. I don't know what other crab things are going to have, but there's going to be king. And I'm going to be there every weekend of the month of June.
You will be the king of the king crab.
See you at Turner's. TurnersSeafood.com.
WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. Last but certainly not least, here on The Big Picture, we're going to tell you that's a thing that happened that is the weirdest news story we could find from last week. For me, I'm keeping it local, if you can believe it. That like almost never happens. But Cam police said an 18-year-old man has been arrested on suspicion he robbed area businesses with a meat cleaver while wearing a mask and making his getaways on an electric bike.
Oh, they got the meat cleaver guy. Good.
Yeah. Matthew Kieran Sharon was charged yesterday in Stoughton District Court with
Did you say Sharon?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay, keep going.
In Stoughton District Court, with armed robbery while masked, assault to commit a felony, larceny from a person, breaking and entering, malicious damage of property, possession of burglarious tools, and resisting arrest. The first armed robbery took place at a laundromat around 10 o'clock on May 21st. And then break-in happened at Kelly's Place restaurant late Saturday night. Through surveillance video, police were able to determine the suspect was a man dressed in all black with a black mask while brandishing a meat cleaver. He also used a distinct electric bicycle to flee each scene. A suspect matching a similar description also robbed a convenience store on Sharon Street in Stoughton early Sunday morning. And then shortly after midnight, two nights ago, a Canton police detective saw an individual on a bike that matched the description of the subject. He was acting suspiciously, apparently. The detective requested assistance, and several Canton police officers responded. After a brief pursuit, police said Kiernan hit a curb and fell off of his electric bicycle. He was taken into custody after a brief struggle. He was wearing, this is where it really gets me, he was wearing articles of clothing that had been worn in both armed robberies, including gloves bearing the Patriots logo. Like, seriously, dude. But according, this is my favorite part. According to Canton police, the detective also found a crowbar and meat cleaver in Kiernan's backpack while conducting a pat frisk, and they were used as weapons to get the victim to comply.
You'll never suspect me. I'm from Sharon. Washington State, you think you've had some bad days? Meet 27-year-old Cameron Jeffrey Wilson. He's a 13 times convicted felon, which means he's not allowed to have a gun. He did. He put it in his pants. He shot himself in the groin.
Ha!
After telling his girlfriend to discard the weapon, he drove to the hospital to get treated. While a doctor was operating on him, a balloon full of marijuana fell out of his anus. The doctor called the cops, who found meth